So I know it feels like so long ago, but before the missions conference, does anyone remember what we were talking about? Which we were in the book of Daniel, and this week we're going to be talking about Daniel in the lion's den. I'm actually curious, when you guys were kids, how many of you had Daniel in the lion's den as your favorite biblical story? Okay. That's not too bad. It's because I know it's a very popular story. I know for me it wasn't necessarily my favorite, but when I was a kid, it was a story that you would hear time and time again. And I think the most interesting thing about doing it now is that I've never actually read the story of Daniel in the lion's den as an adult, right? So you hear it a lot as a kid, and whoever your leaders are when you're in Sunday school or when you're in junior church, they'll take you through the story, and they'll take you through bits and pieces of it. They'll take you through the main gist of it. But to actually read it in the text for itself, and not only that, because we've been reading Daniel with Pastor Rob since the beginning of the year, to see how it connects with the rest of the book of Daniel. Because when you look at Daniel 6 in light of the other books in the Bible, it makes so much, not only does it make so much more sense, but I think it just becomes deeper and richer. I don't know if any of you guys have ever experienced this, but when I think I was in grade 12, and I had the second half of the year off because I was able to take some courses quicker than usual. So I spent my time watching all of the Disney movies. And if you've ever watched the Disney movies when you're a kid, like I'm a guy, so I'm not watching Cinderella, I'm not watching Snow White. You just kick Elsa down the street, okay? But I like Lion King, I like Simba, you know, he's the guy. You like all these different characters. But when you read it, when you watch these movies as an adult, you start to pick up on all these, not only all these inside jokes that are meant for adults in the movies, but you get such a deeper appreciation for what the writers were trying to do. You get such a deeper appreciation for what the story is trying to tell you. Like now I'm at the point where I was gonna call my first daughter Cinderella, because she's my favorite Disney princess now, seriously. And just seeing how her character is, it's so similar to rereading Daniel in the Lion's Den. So this sermon is gonna be more about some of the things that I've noticed that have changed since I first heard the story of Daniel in the Lion's Den. So the first thing I want to bring up is the point of when you're a kid, a lot of the focus is placed on Daniel. Interestingly enough, when I read through it and when I saw how it connected with the rest of the book, I saw that there was a very strong focus on King Darius, which is the king. And it's weird. Again, it's for some of us, it might be weird for us to really see that and say, wait a minute, King Darius might be the focus of the story. Not saying you can't learn anything from looking at the story of Daniel or looking at how Daniel goes throughout this journey, but I think that you can learn a lot, and I think it connects to the main heart of this story when you look at the story of King Darius. It's very similar to when we went through the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we call it their story. They only have one line in that entire story, right? King Nebuchadnezzar is doing most of the talking in that story. So we're looking to see how, or when we're looking at the story of the fiery furnace, it's how is King Nebuchadnezzar being brought to God? And I think similarly, in a story where a lot of the story focuses on where King Darius is going, when Daniel is left by himself, we don't pan to Daniel when he's stuck in the lion's den. We pan to King Darius when he's stuck in his palace. So I just want to take you through some of the things I found in looking at King Darius' story. When we look at I want to start at verse 13 of chapter 6. Then they said to the king, Daniel, who is
who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or the decree that you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. So when Colin read this, read the first half of this story, the people who worked under Daniel, who were jealous of Daniel, they went to the king knowing, trying to trick the king into making a law that would punish Daniel. And the king went along with it. Like, I don't think a lot of people would disagree with saying, yeah, just make me the center of attention for the next month. So I don't think really King Darius had a problem with that. But when he realized what the problem was, the story shifts now to King Darius is trying to find every single way to try and fix this problem, to try and save his friend Daniel. Darius took the place of God, and you see throughout the story that he fails to live up to that place that he's trying to take. Remember, King Darius is the king of the Medes and the Persians, and he is the leader of this very, very vast kingdom. Okay? And we see, as we read in verse 16, so the king gave the order, then the men went as a group to King Darius and said, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. This is a man who has all the advantages in the world, the man who's one of the most powerful men in the world, and he was unable to save a guy from the lion's den. The most powerful man in the world, but he was actually weaker than the laws and the decrees that he enforced. And I think that when you look at the story of King Darius, it's taking a man who is up here and God putting all of these, or God creating a situation that takes him all the way up here and brings him all the way down here. He's taking a man who thought he was more than he thought he was and bringing him back to the level which he's supposed to be. When you look at Psalms 146, verses 3 and 4, do not put your trust in princes, in human beings who cannot save. When their spirit departs, they return to the ground. On that very day, their plans become nothing. Like, Darius is taken through this journey where, again, he's up here and he realizes that not only is he put down here, but he's put through all these things which makes him realize that he's meant to be down here, that he's in reality, he is no stronger than any other man. The fact that he is the king, the fact that he has all this power and is unable to really change any of his own situation or any of the situation of his friend. Now, the second thing I noticed is when we take the story of King Darius and we couple it with the story of Daniel, we see an interesting thing and an interesting theme throughout this book. Now, when I was a kid, when I was younger, when we focused on this story, the focus was more on, look at what Daniel's doing. Look at the courage that he has. That the king makes a law, and he's not going to budge from it. And I don't think that Daniel doesn't have courage in this story. I think Daniel does have a lot of courage. But I think what is shown so much stronger is the peace that Daniel has compared to the lack of peace that King Darius has. So when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den in chapter 6, as we continue, in verse 18, then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. Darius is in the perfect position right now. He's the most powerful man. He has the greatest kingdom. He has the nicest palace in the world, and he sleeps in the worst possible way. Has lack of sleep, actually. When you compare this with the peace that Daniel has when he's thrown into the lion's den and when he's taken out. Like, me and Pastor Rob were talking about this. Pastor Rob, he was saying, I mean, I can just imagine Daniel as he's in the lion's den, just snuggling up with one of the lions, using the mane as one of his pillows. And it's just, like, you gotta think he had the best sleep of his life right there. But we don't think about that. We don't, like, when you look at that beast on the screen, and if you guys remember last week, that ferocious lion that was on the screen on one of our songs, I mean, you don't think about that when you think of the story of Daniel, especially when you look at Daniel's situation. But I want to focus more on verse 10 to 11. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows were open towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So again, in this story, Daniel, he hears, it's not that he doesn't hear what the king issues, he heard what the king issued. And he said, well, I'm gonna go pray. And it doesn't sound like he's saying, oh man, what am I gonna do? Like, should I pray, should I not pray? It doesn't seem there's any confliction there. Now, I actually wanna take us back to Daniel chapter 4, because some people might look at the story of Daniel and say, well, of course the writer's not gonna write that Daniel's scared. He probably was scared, but the writer's not gonna say Daniel's scared here. Daniel waited back and forth because he's trying to paint Daniel in a specific light. But when you look at other verses in Daniel, you see that the writer writes Daniel as someone who does have fears at points in time. When Daniel figured out, was talking to King Nebuchadnezzar, and he figured out that one of his dreams was actually speaking against Nebuchadnezzar as opposed to talking about how glorious King Nebuchadnezzar was. In Daniel chapter 4, verse 19, then Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. So the king said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its meaning alarm you. So Daniel knew the meaning of this dream, but he was afraid to tell the king. He was terrified to tell the king because he knew what the dream meant. He knew that it was speaking against the king. There was a fear there. When we read Daniel chapter 6, there doesn't seem to be any hint of fear. In fact, that when he went to go pray to the Lord, three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to God. Giving thanks to God. Not saying, Lord, you have to get me out of this situation. It's, Lord, to God be the glory. In verse 11, he says that he's asking the Lord for help. But again, it doesn't seem to be in this worrying kind of way. I think that it's very similar, again, when we look at the story of the fiery furnace.
In the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the one line that these three men have when they're facing the king, after King Nebuchadnezzar has threatened them, saying, if you don't bow down to my statue, if you don't bow down to my image, I'm going to take you three and throw you into the fiery furnace. Then which God is going to save you from my hand? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him in verse 16, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have put up. You don't get the sense that there's this weighing back and forth, this shakiness to their peace. Instead, you see these three men in the fiery furnace, and you see Daniel in this story, in Daniel chapter 6. There is a very strong calm and a very easy sense of what's going to happen to them. They're not very worried about what's going to happen to them. And I think the reason why is because they know who's in control. They look at King Nebuchadnezzar and they say, King Nebuchadnezzar, we realize who you are, but you're nothing compared to the God that we serve. You think that you're in control of all these things? You think that you have the power to throw us into the furnace, to throw us into the lion's den? And you can, but God's power is greater than yours. I want to take you guys to Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 to 9. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guide your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Daniel knew that when he was going to the lion's den, not only did he know that God was in control, he knew that God was with him. Verse 9. But the process of taking all your fears, taking everything that is worrying you, everything that's causing anxiety, and placing it before the feet of the Lord, that process creates peace. And I think the reason why that happens is because we as human beings, we tend to control things very, very often. We tend to, the way that human beings find peace is that they use the control that they have, and they use the control to create that peace. But understanding, once you understand, excuse me, that human beings have no true control of anything. When I was in the last years of my high school days, I used to actually work at McDonald's. And McDonald's, great job, if anyone's looking for a job, very easy job, very, 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 very easy. It's like an Einstein job where you can do a lot of manual work without thinking at all, and then you can put all your thinking into something else. But besides that point, when I would be working, so often, every single day actually, and I realized this like a year in, I was like, wow, I'm one of the best workers in this place. I'm not finished. I'm one of the best workers in this place, but I can guarantee you that every single day I've made at least one mistake. I've made at least one mistake every single day that I go to work, every single day I work at McDonald's. Now, when you work at McDonald's, when you make a mistake, someone doesn't get onions on their burger, okay? Someone doesn't get enough ketchup on their burger. Or when someone didn't ask for something, they get it instead. That's the kind of mistake you make at McDonald's. When you make a mistake, if you're a police officer, someone could die. When you make a mistake, when you're a prime minister or a president, I don't need to tell you what's happening down south, but a lot of things can happen here or there. And the more power we give to people, us in the church, we understand that they're the same person as us. They're human beings just like us. But when you're outside the church, when you don't have a God who you can ask and you can go talk to and know that they're in control, you're looking to people who you know are flawed. You're looking to them and giving them the control over you, which can be the most frightening thing on the face of the earth, letting someone else dictate what's going to happen in your life. Or at least have that image, at least have that thought when you're thinking that. For us as Christians, we know that we can take every single worry that we have, every single care that we have, we place it at the feet of God, and we walk away knowing that He's in control. We walk away knowing that whatever happens, He's got this. Whatever happens. And I think that's the contrast there. The anxiety of King Darius, a man who's trying to find ways to rectify his situation, trying to find ways to fix this situation, to change his circumstances, and a man who said, if God wants to take me out of this, that's fine. If he doesn't, that's fine. It's up to him. It's not up to me. He knows best, and I don't. Which is another thing that we struggle with. We try and, when we try and get into the mind of God, God's ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. We see our own situation, and we tend to question what's happening. But Daniel's in the situation. He's in the worst situation possibly he's ever faced in his long life. But he has such a relationship with God that he brings it to him, and he leaves it at his feet. I think this is one of the things I've struggled with most in my life, is trying to find that peace, trying to find a way not to worry. If you haven't made it a habit to pray, not just pray on your own, but pray as a group, pray with people. When Colin talks about prayer meeting, or when the church talks about creating prayer cells, it's not just so that way we can tick off more people are praying in our church. It sounds good to do that, to say, yep, every single person in our church prays. Every single person in our church does something very religious. But it's not about the act of meeting as a group and praying and talking, right? And talking to each other. It's taking our cares and our worries and bringing them before the Lord. And every single time we do that, you walk away with peace. If you've ever been to prayer meeting, if you've ever been to a spot where people are praying, like not just praying, but praying, right? They're sharing their concerns with each other and with the Lord. And they're just crying out to God saying, Lord, I can't see it right now. I can't see it. But I know you can. So I'm giving it to you. It's one of the most freeing things that you can experience. In the last slide, and the last thing that I've noticed is, or I think that gets overlooked a lot, is how much this story glorifies God, how much this story actually talks and focuses on God. When we look at the ending declaration that's found in Daniel, Daniel chapter 6, verses 25 to 28. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and the peoples. This is after Daniel has been rescued out of the lion's den. The King Darius wrote to all the nations and the peoples of every language and all the earth. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And I think three things that this ending declaration focuses on is God's eternality, the fact that God just doesn't exist in a point of time, in a point of history. He exists outside of history. He is the beginning and the end. God wasn't a was. God wasn't here and wasn't there, or was here, was there. God just is eternal. Second thing I think it focuses on is that the all-powerful nature of God, when it's talking about his dominion. When a king talks about dominion, it's about how much he controls, how much power he has. God's dominion, as it says, will not be destroyed, and his dominion will never end. And thirdly, is that he's the ultimate savior. The songs that we sang today, the Lord is my salvation. Especially looking at what King Darius went through, where he tried to save one single person, couldn't do it. And God was able to save that. God was able to save Daniel. Bring him out of an impossible situation. I think for a lot of people, this last one, or I think all of these three. Number one, what they do is that they separate people from God. The most powerful man in the world is declaring this. The most powerful man in the world is saying, God is all the way up here, I'm down here. So before, when we talked about God was taking him on this journey from the top to the bottom, King Darius is recognizing that now and declaring it for himself. This creates such a vast gap between us and God. And for anyone who doesn't really, who's new to God, new to Christianity, understand that God is nothing like us. Understand that God is so vastly bigger and better and more glorious than us. He's not just a person. Like, we tend to think of this old man on clouds for some reason. He's this being that dwells in unapproachable light. He's this holy, holy God. And holy doesn't mean, oh, he's a very good and pious and religious good thing. Holy, when you look at it, when you look at that word in its original language, it just means set apart. It means that there's creation, there's every single thing that exists in the world, and then there's God by himself. There's a story in Isaiah. When Isaiah was face to face with the Lord, Isaiah glanced at the Lord and said, "Woe is me, because I'm a man of unclean lips. I am unworthy to be in the presence of this God. And because I'm in the presence of this holy and righteous God, I'm going to be annihilated. I'm going to be destroyed." And sometimes as us as people, we don't understand how much, not that God detests sin, but God cannot be in the presence of sin. If he's in the presence of sin, anything that's sinful is wiped away, is destroyed. When I was trying to get the youth to understand the concept of holy, I went to Tim Hortons and I bought a bag of Timbits. And then I know someone who has a doggy bag for when you pick up poop. So then I rolled up the Timbits to make them look like it was dog poop. And I put it in the bag, I tied it, and I put on a glove. I sold the bit completely. I put on this rubber glove, said I didn't want to touch it. I pulled out this bag of poop. I started swinging it all around the place, started throwing it at each other. These kids were freaking out, okay? if someone's ever thrown poop at you, if you've ever been at the zoo with a monkey or something, you know what I'm talking about, okay? But I tossed it, this kid literally jumped from one side of the pew to the other side of the pew. That's how far he jumped, okay? And that was something that wasn't even real, wasn't even close. These kids wanted nothing to do with what was in that bag, okay? They didn't open it and look, but they said, you know what, I'm not even going to take that chance, forget that, okay? Even more, a million times more, infinitely times more, God can have nothing to do with sin. And every single one of us knows that when we look deep into our hearts, no one is righteous, not one single person. The next point is that God is the Lord of all things, which is when we read this entire story. Now, this is something that did shock me, that I did forget, or definitely was not read to me when I was a kid. I'm going to read the whole thing, verses 19 to 23. Verses 19 to 24, excuse me. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near to the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done anything wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed, and he gave orders to lift Daniel out of the lion's den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wounds was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and their children. Did not hear that part ever when I was a kid, okay? And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. So a very happy ending for Daniel in the lion's den. But now, God is the Lord of all things. Did God stop being the Lord of all things when those people were thrown in the lion's den? Was he just the God of all things when Daniel was in the lion's den? And again, as an adult reading this now, the first thing I thought of when I finished the story was, what makes Daniel different than all the martyrs in the first 100 years of Christianity? Which, ironically, both of them were thrown to wild beasts. God is the Lord of all things. And it's coupled with this next point. He uses everything for his glory. When we go to John, the book of John, John chapter 9, verses 2 to 3, Jesus is walking with his disciples, and they see a man that was born blind. In verse 1, as he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," Jesus said, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed through him." I think Daniel was saved from the lion's den because God wanted to be glorified out of that. And I think that when the martyrs in the first years of Christianity were slaughtered and killed, God still used that to glorify him. Because what both of those groups had was the same unshakable peace that transcends all understanding, that belongs to God, that is from God. I think God can use anything to glorify him. But some people, they might not be comfortable with that. When we talk about a person in our church whose son has cancer, like, why would God do that? And I'd say so many things. There's so many reasons why God would give someone cancer or would allow that person to have cancer. I think then there could be many reasons, could be a lot of reasons. But the number one reason, I think, especially when that person's a Christian, when a person who's a Christian goes through turmoil, goes through horrible things, and they still have this joy, they still have this unshakable peace, people will see that and say, this is not from a man. This is not something that's man-made. This peace that this person has, I want that. Where can I get that? And that it brings them to God. It brings people to salvation, the glorifying of God. And for us, and for people like Daniel, Daniel was willing. I'm not sure if Daniel wanted to die. I don't think he did. But he was willing for God to use him in any way that he wanted him to. And for God to have the glory. Daniel says, whatever glory I can get, I do not care. God, I worship you. You are my judge. The name Daniel means you are my judge. And that's exactly how Daniel lived his life. I think this book, it's a call for us to live in the same way, to live in a way that God is our judge. But do we do that? Do we trust him with everything? Do we trust him in the good times and then throw him away in the bad times? Or do we run to him in the bad times and let people see God through us in every single spot in our lives, in every single situation in our lives? God is the one who saves. I talked with someone a few weeks ago, and I remember his words where he said, "You know what, Emmanuel? We as Christians, we don't save a single person. Human beings don't save a single person. God works through us. Maybe we're present." Colin talked about Ian Davis. I remember when I was a kid, And I remember it so vividly. Ian was sitting in that back corner where Ben Chan is sitting right now, and he was talking with one of the youth leaders, and he was just bawling his eyes out. And that was the day that he became a Christian. But whoever that youth leader was, Ian wasn't saved because of that youth leader. Ian was saved because that youth leader shared God with him, shared the gospel with him. And Ian got a sense of who God really is. And despite us being sinful, despite us being flawed, despite us being tainted with sin, God, as the ultimate person, the ultimate Savior, sent his son to die for us. Sent his son so that way we could have the chance to be and have communion with God. Bring us back to the Father. But we have to be willing to let ourselves be put in those spots. Which starts with trust. Starts with trust. Daniel was put in one of the worst situations, but he trusted that God knew what he was doing. Regardless of the outcome, he trusted that God knew what he was doing. And I just pray that for us in this church, for us here, we can have the same trust in God. We are never going to understand everything that God does. We are never going to understand everything that God is. But when you get a glimpse of him, and I encourage you, if you don't know God, get a glimpse of him. Because I guarantee you that glimpse is going to be enough. That glimpse will show you that, wow, God is a God that's meant to be feared and meant to be respected. He's a God that loves you beyond more than you can possibly imagine.